Did you see that YouTube sold for $500 million? I'm sorry, was it $500 million? And that Sumner Redstone said he wanted it bad. He wanted to pay even. It's worth like $1.5 billion for YouTube. No, it's not YouTube, or is it MySpace? It's MySpace.
MySpace, yeah.
And YouTube is the one they covet now, is that right?
Well, they're denying it.
They do, and Sumner Redstone said that he wouldn't pay for Facebook, though. That was the other one.
Yeah.
Facebook's, is that like a photo album web,
right,
like a MySpace thing, right?
Yeah.
Is Sumner Redstone the guy who runs our little company?
Sumner Redstone oversees the entire empire that is CBS and Viacom.
They paid $500 million for MySpace, and they want to pay.
No, they didn't. They lost out on the bidding.
Oh, okay.
They lost out on the bidding for MySpace.
Okay. To Fox.
These people can't afford to buy a station T-shirts, right? Same group. I'm just checking.
Well,
because they got $1.5 billion for
Facebook. Don't say
that out loud. I'm just checking because I don't want to resent the wrong people. I want to make sure if I'm aiming my hate lady.
Well, it's I have paper clips here, but we're yesterday's news. MySpace is the big deal.
Okay.
Now, who bought it? Did a newspaper company buy
Fox
it?
Fox bought MySpace.
Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch,
Fox,
yeah.
Oh.
What's he going to do with it? It's going to be my right space. It's going to be spin you to the right.
There's
going to start having a little American flag up in the corner.
No face zone.
There's some statistics on MySpace today that I frankly find unbelievable. They claim that it's mostly older people using MySpace. And I don't know how they're figuring that, but they say that over 35-year-olds are the majority of the people on MySpace.
Wow. My son has a new girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I said, how did you meet her? And he said, I met her on MySpace. Hey, because remember like 5 years ago we would take some phone calls from people and be like,
I met a girl online.
You're one of those people who met someone online. Yeah,
we're completely happy. She fits me.
She flew in from Arkansas.
We just hit it off immediately.
I met her at the airport. We're married. We have, and it was a curiosity back then. We'd all go, ooh, and you have kids, and it worked out. Well, good for you. You couldn't, and you felt a little like they were,
How sad that he couldn't meet a real human face to face.
Exactly.
But now,
not now.
You know why?
Why?
Because it used to be that you had a proximity thing about who you married. I had a sociology teacher that said, there's 6 billion guys in the world, right, girls? You can pick any guy you want, right? And they're like, yeah. Like, well, let's think about that for a minute, because you're probably going to want somebody who's of your same race. So, blah, blah, we cut that number by 1/6. Now there are only blah, blah, blah. Now you're going to have to meet somebody who's within 10 years of your own age. Blah, blah, blah. Cut that number again. You're going to meet somebody, most people marry somebody within 100 miles of where they're born.
That's right.
And you keep cutting this number down, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Next you know, there's 1 in 6 guys for you out there, ladies.
Jeez.
So quit being so damn picky.
It's true. Is this the same teacher that got thrown out of school for that math question with Johnny had 6 bags of crack and how much did each bag cost? It's the same guy.
Him. Really do. But it used to be you had to meet somebody face-to-face to find the love of your life. Now there's an infinite dating pool.
Well, isn't there a way to, match interests? Can't you basically put in what you're looking
for? Well, that's what they're doing online now. But Keith, the way he met this person is kind of odd. I don't know if he wants me to... I don't know how serious they are yet.
How long has it been?
Hours.
6 minutes. I guess they're together. It's the weirdest thing. I guess they're just dating. But he made an announcement last night at dinner. I am dating. He's been chased for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. More or less chased. Probably less.
That's odd for him,
too. Keith. He's a bit of a... but he's a good-looking guy. Hey, can't help it. It's like Dane Cook with Jessica Simpson. It's like, all right, if you must. I guess, and you do this too? You cruise for people online?
Yeah, but see, my friends and I, we cruise MySpace to look at all the hoe bags that we used to go to high school with just to catch up and
see what they're doing.
Yeah, we don't cruise for men.
You cruise to make fun of girls?
Yeah, or your exes. Now, that's another fun one. Look up your ex on MySpace.
So you can actually, in some ways, keep surveillance up on people.
It's a way of playing God. That's what it is. You get to look into somebody else's life without actually having to talk to them or let them know that you're looking at them.
Wow. Did you ever see Men in Black, the movie? Remember when Tommy Lee Jones could use that satellite system and he scoped in on the woman he left behind and watched her in real live time from space?
That's a little bit kind of feeling, huh? And we're going with bigger bandwidth. We're getting there. I mean, there will be people that voluntarily strap little floating cameras
Like in the NFL above the field there?
Right, yes, exactly.
Nice.
He'll be,
let's go to Bob Rivers Sky Cab. Oh, Bob's in the men's room now. Ooh.
It'll happen. Trish in Sumner. Hello, Trish.
Hi. I was calling because I had a nanny that was doing MySpace while I was at work and met a nice boy online, and turned out that the boy was a girl.
She met a boy online who was a girl dressed up as a boy.
Right. Pretty creepy.
Not to us it isn't. It's actually kind of cool. Can you tell us a little bit more?
So it was just a lesson learned on her part that, you know, the picture didn't quite match what, you know, she met in person.
Right, so. That can happen. But see that's just the pitfalls of any dating. I mean, the same thing could happen in a bar. I wouldn't blame MySpace for that.
Kinks wrote a song about that.
It's called Lola.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing new there.
Old as the hills.
But the fact that meeting people online has become the preferred way to make human contact instead of just, this is an option. You know, like dating services used to be for the desperate. And my son, by the way, you know he's not desperate.
He's not desperate in the desperate way, but he strikes me as the kind of guy who enjoys dating a lot of women, which is, you know, good for him.
Well, it's a phase that he's going through.
No, but that's
vicariously
fine.
There, babe.
That's fine.
I remember those years.
No.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is he's also kind of the sensitive type that while he's dating all these women says, if only I could find the right girl for me.
Stop all this.
And then he finds her and he says, you know, I like to go back out and date some of those other guys.
Well, he does. He hasn't been able to settle down yet. But right. I think you know, that's being 20, early 20s now. God, don't settle down until you really are ready. The people that settle down before they're ready, then it's a starter marriage, then they got a couple of kids over in Wenatchee, and then you know what happens. But so if it's your preferred way of meeting someone, and I have a few friends for whom it is, give us a call, 1-800-252-1025. Tell me about the best and the worst meeting you've had online. Now, what Keith happened to him is that he found someone online that he used to go to school with. So it wasn't like a stranger. It didn't turn out to be a man dressed up as a woman.
But that's how he reconnected.
Yeah. Okay. And he's, you know, he told me that when he was in high school, I don't know if he's told her that, but he is now.
Ugly Betty?
No, not Ugly Betty.
Okay.
That he had a huge crush on her
in
high school, but she never knew and he never did anything about it. And so now they're dating. So it was kind of nice. And I thought, well, how do you shop for that online? But the kids, they know all the tricks.
Oh, yeah.
If you have met people online and it's your preferred way of meeting people, I want to know why you prefer it to. And by the way, you may be right. There may come a time when we look on the humans used to accidentally stumble onto each other. That's why they used to have bake sales and church groups.
Humans.
Stupid humans.
Well, MySpace has done to dating what eBay has done to the garage sale. Why just count on the people cruising up and down your block to buy your used worthless goods when you can have the whole world
have the whole world to choose from? It's also done for dating something that used to be only for prostitution. I.e., you shop for.
Interesting.
You shop.
Yes. Like turning the pages of a catalog.
It's a drive-by.
Yeah.
Eric.
It's actually a control issue more than anything else. My goddaughters are all on MySpace, and they prefer to communicate with everybody that way because they're in complete control of the conversation. They can stop it, start it anytime they want.
Wow. It's I would have thought, women. Remember when it was like, well, women will never do online because that's dangerous. No, women like the online aspect of, I don't have to let you in. It's almost like online acts as a virtual zipper. I don't have to let you even know who I really am until I want to. Isn't that right? Is there a certain safety?
Well, you know, there's two.
Or the thought of undoing a zipper and find out who you really are really scares the pants back on me.
MySpace is a little different than, we should specify, it's different than some of the dating
it's
services.
MySpace, well, if you put all your real information, you don't put your address down.
Well, no, but there are people who post everything about them for the public to see, including their diaries, their journals, and blah blah
this
blah.
This is my drunkalogue. Pictures of me passed out in toilets from here to.
And you said you cruised guys you used to go to high school with who were loser partiers, and they were still loser partiers.
Yeah, like they'd have their shirt off for their main photo, and the title of their MySpace page was "Let's Get Wasted."
Woo!
And their top eight are the same eight guys they hung out with in high school. Move on.
The Kagan crew.
God.
Is it your primary way of meeting people? Ben in Arlington. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
You're on.
I'm on. Yeah, I've been with somebody for about 5 or 6 months that I met online, and it's not just for kids. It's all ages, I think.
And that's, by the way, it's in a news article today that MySpace had a survey done by Score Media Metrics, and they're trying to claim that half of their site's users are 35 or older.
Yeah, that could be. I've never done MySpace. I've never been on there. This was actually
dating
specific dating service.
Buyagirl.com.
Well, the survey company claims half the users are 35 and older, and half those 35 and older claim to be 16-year-old girls.
That's right. So Rob, why meet people online?
Well, I think it's sort of ironic to say because you wouldn't think this, but in a way I feel it's a little safer. And you can see exactly what somebody's like. I mean, obviously somebody could be lying, but you have the opportunity to meet them and you find out, hey, they are lying, and then you just say, okay, that's it.
How long do you go before you actually, touch a hand and shake a hand and say, how you doing in person? Do you talk for quite a while online, or do you just...
I think it depends. I mean, there were a few. I looked at a lot of different profiles, and there were a few of them that I corresponded with and never ended up meeting. And there were a couple that I did end up meeting and just went a couple times, and that was it.
What was the worst meeting you have? Was it a transgender deal?
What's that?
The worst meeting you had. What was it?
Well, it had to do with pets, actually.
No. Don't worry. Yeah. She won't get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a.
She can bring water later too.
It was the size of a rat, and that I just didn't want that.
There was a pet you didn't like, a smelly pet.
Yeah. That was the main problem. I didn't really have any horrible experiences, to tell you the truth.
All right. Sounds good, Bob. I've had a friend also, who tells me it's been fantastic. He also says that online, more so than in a bar, once you get to the point where you meet, it's what they call a sure thing.
You've already done the negotiations on the computer.
There's a level of trust already built up.
There's a level of expectation.
Okay.
Who is this? No, that's not Bob. That's Keith. Keith, go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, I met lots of girls online. But I met them in bars too, and I prefer to meet them online. You got a lot more, diversity, and you meet them all over the place. In fact, I online dated a gal from somewhere in the Orient. I'm not sure where she was at.
In the Orient.
I'm sorry?
Somewhere in the Orient. You dated her online with across an ocean.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I dated my wife across an ocean too. She's from Australia. And we dated for, probably 2 or 3 months. And then we started calling each other. And when we both realized that our phone bills were more expensive than a plane ticket, I moved there for 6 months until they kicked me out. And then she came over here 10 months later. She's been here for, 4 years in August.
And you're married and just thrilled.
Oh, love it. Well, in fact, we have two beautiful little girls, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
And your online dating days are way past, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think she put up with that.
Thanks for asking, Joe.
It was great because, I'm not the best-looking guy in the world, but I am great at the heart, and that's what she fell in love with.
Is she hot-looking?
I think so. Granted, she's not a supermodel, but I'm not the cover of GQ either.
So it don't matter.
Nice.
So is it, is it a way for someone who's not good-looking to find some country where ugly is good looking?
It's relative, yeah.
Well, I have a best friend of mine, and I think, and even with his track record with women, he is gorgeous. You know, I mean, he is never without a date. He has women calling him, and he prefers to date online because...
Well, and that's what I started this off with. It
yeah,
used to be...
He prefers it because he says that the girls he meets in bars and stuff, they're only interested in his looks. They don't care what's underneath.
Interesting.
I want to rescue puppies. That's all I want to do. But you girls want to have sex all day.
All right. Thank you. And what you said is true there. Now, think about that. Dated a girl in the Orient somewhere.
Somewhere.
Picked a girl in Australia. Mm-hmm. You said that online dating, online meeting, will do for, I guess, cross-pollination, the whole population of the world, what eBay did for garage sales.
Right.
Was it your science teacher? Who gave you that?
Sociology professor.
Sociology professor yep. said most people marry within 100 miles of where they're born.
Fact.
That's no longer required.
Nope.
You can actually troll the world.
Well, that's a bad way to put it, but yeah.
Teresa, has online dating become the preferred way of meeting someone? Teresa?
Yes, sir.
You're there.
Gosh, I don't know. But I will say that I'm over 35. I have a MySpace profile. I'm happily married, and the reason I do is because I have four teenagers to keep track of.
Ah.
And I monitor their MySpace profiles. So there are adults that are on MySpace, but and they're there for different reasons. I'm there to keep an eye on my kids.
They're chaperones. And now your kids are how old?
18, 17, 16, and 15.
God bless. Catholic?
No kidding, baby.
It's a blended family. I didn't do that by myself.
Oh, okay, good. So the question is, when they start meeting people and dating, it's become the preferred way now to meet online. Are you going to be okay with that?
No. You know, they network a lot socially online, and I go through my daughter's profiles all the time, and I have one daughter that had like 65 guys from all over the country she had no way of knowing. And I said, look, you can't do that. That's okay. You need to meet three-dimensional people.
So you are trying to bring her back to the abacus. So if she liked a kid from Australia and started pen-palling, remember you used to call it pen-pal when there was a pen and a paper involved.
Well, I wouldn't stop it, but I have to encourage them to approach any of those relationships with caution.
With caution.
And to remind them that anybody that you meet online, it may not be who they say they are.
Thank you very much. Michelle, go ahead. Michelle.
Hi. My husband and I met online in 1997.
Wow, the dark ages of the early internets.
Yes.
That's when Al Gore was first putting the thing together.
And yeah. we cyberdated for 6 months. He came. I was from Pennsylvania, by the way, and he lived here. And he flew to Pennsylvania. We spent a week together. There was sparks, and we decided it would work. Cyber dated and phone dated for about 3 more months, and then I moved out here, and we are now married.
Any kids?
We're both older, so I have 3 older children, and he has none. But we have
nice.
2 little wiener dogs.
When you meet online, confirm for me, if you will, when you meet online and you cyber date for a while,
mm-hmm.
does that count towards, you know, saving it for until we've dated for a while?
Yes.
Yeah. So
every time you log on, it's your 5th date, 6th date, 7th date, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So when you actually meet in person 3-dimensionally, there's no protocol for waiting a bit.
Hang there up! It's Westy lady coming up inside. It's Westy man from behind. It's can't wait another minute. Come on.
Not when you spend a week together, no.
No, it's spent a week together. So yeah. That's weird. I've never met someone for the first time having already agreed to have sex with them.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds fantastic.
It is.
I had known him all my life when we met at the airport.
That's cool.
And we knew each other. I mean, we'd sent pictures of each other and talked on the phone for hours and hours at a time, and you know, chatted online and stuff, and it was just wonderful, and it was kind of like love at first sight.
We are going to do one more segment on this, so please be patient. I know some of you are on the phones holding. The question is not you know, we know about online dating, but the question is it now the preferred way? Should it be taught in schools? Proper online dating safety techniques. We teach all kinds of safety. You know, we have the health. It should be part of health class.
Yeah, yeah.
How to tell if it's really a man.
I'm having problems with my panties. What style do you wear as a 15-year-old girl?
How to tell how old the person really is. How to not give out your information. That mom, I mean, you know, she's a good parent. But should schools be actually preparing people for a world in which people always meet... I would say always. Prefer to meet virtually. Jack Black from High Fidelity. I'll bet he met people online.
He doesn't have to meet people online.
Now.
Well, in the past.
Look at that troll. There was a time when...
He's funny. That is all he needs.
A guy can be funny and ugly.
You can be funny and ugly. You could be funny and fat. You could be funny and short. And women will still like you.
Yeah.
It covers all three of us, doesn't it?
I made it.
Every one of us. That's nice of you. Yeah.
How about funny and nerdy?
Funny and nerdy can work.
Funny and bald.
Funny. Oh, bald is always beautiful. Absolutely.
Okay. If you just tuned in the news, MySpace, in the news, YouTube, in the news, online dating, all of these things. MySpace sold for $500 million, and that was pennies on the dollar. Wow. Should be worth $1.5 billion. Social networking. It's become not just a curiosity, which is how it started, not just a thing for people who had trouble meeting people, which is what dating services typically are.
I love how you gave me a sympathetic look when you said that. Pat, pat, pat.
You did for a little while. I had trouble meeting people.
Yeah.
Well, those dating services are there for a specific goal of ending loneliness. MySpace is there to just...
It's now become the preferred way for people to hook up.
Right.
I believe it's turned a corner. So it's like online shopping. Remember online shopping? People are like, I wouldn't enter a credit card on the internet.
That's crazy. Plus, what about the little shop owner down the street?
Right.
Who will care for her?
It's turned a corner. Meeting people online is now a preferred way of meeting people. Have you had luck with it? What are the dangers? What's the best and worst experience you've had? Do you think it's okay that our society, our species, our planet shifts to shopping for mates, shopping online?
I have to tell you, because we talked about this on the air when I was starting to think, okay, maybe I should try the online dating thing, and I did eHarmony, the free trial. I never ended up actually going on a date through it, but that's how I felt. I felt, you feel kind of like you're telling people, I have to be in a relationship, so I'm going to shop for one right now. It felt weird.
Kip in Tacoma. Hello, Kip.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, I'm just curious. You know, there's these girls that are online that are on these online dating services. You know, you talk to them, you talk to them, you talk to them, and then they never actually want to meet, and I don't understand that. I've tried everything. I've tried the internet when I was younger. I've gone from the internet to meeting people in bars, and meeting people in bars doesn't cut it, and, you know, it's just...
I think you have to be far away. I think if you try Australia, the Philippines, China, then they'll want to meet, but there'll be a plane ticket involved for you.
Right, you're their ticket in.
Now, are you looks challenged?
Not at all. I'm a very, very attractive guy, and I've never had problems meeting women.
And also, you're modest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Down there.
So you're extremely...
You know, but it's just the ones that I meet are just not, you know...
You know why?
Not quality, and then you know, I think...
Not quality.
Right.
What does quality mean?
Well, I mean, you know, psychotic. Not being psychotic and having issues.
See, this is what I would have thought. I would have had the old-fashioned notion, anyone online's got to have problems because they can't meet a person in real life. But that used to be partially true.
Right.
It's not true anymore.
And I don't want to be biased, but I can see men going to meet strange people, you know, in hopes of something happening. But I think women has got to be a little more, you know, a little more of a risky element in there for that. Maybe you're
What are you saying, Joe? Spit it out.
Well, I'm saying it doesn't seem normal for a woman to meet a guy on a computer and then go meet him in person.
And the deal was already sealed on the first meet.
Guys are desperate enough that they'll do anything. They'll take those risks. But
well,
I
had a blind date in Florida once. Went on that. It was a great gal, just, you know, too far away. But, you know, I found that my best way of meeting women, I was in the radio business years ago, and I think meeting women over the radio, great. I think the best woman I met is when I was a DJ at a radio station here in Tacoma.
Well, go ahead. You can mention the station.
KBTC 91.7. 91.7. The classic rock station.
Oh, cool. I remember that. Station. That was actually a pretty good station. I'm glad they're dead.
You were the troller on From Midnight to 6 a.m., weren't you?
Troller. Call my lines right now, yeah, babes.
Yeah. Chick Highline, call
but no, you know, it's just I totally want to meet somebody that I can, you know, for a long term, and it's just, it's not happening. It's driving me nuts. You know, like I said, the bar scene doesn't do it because that turns into a one-night stand.
Not always. Not
Wait a
always.
Minute. I mean, we just had a huge... ugly guy call us and say, it's great, man. I found my wife.
Australian bride. They wear them in stones down there.
I think you have stones. If you can't even find a girl on the internet where they're begging for it, I think you have to look inward, my friend.
I think you're a perfect radio guy. I think you need to get back in the
business. Get back in this business.
Yeah. I'll use the radio then. I'll use, hey, have the ladies call in. If they want to get in touch with me, Bob, send them my way. You know,
all right. They're all over the internet.
Yeah, but you know the one they never want to actually meet.
He's right, because women like to live relationships in their head. And I say this because I do this. It's so easy to meet a guy online and hear about how great he is, see his list of qualities that you match up with, and then daydream about how the relationship will go.
Right.
And then you have to actually meet him in person, and the possibility of it failing is just too much, so you just don't.
And
meet
that's him. How it works. That's how it always works. All these, I mean, beautiful, seem nice women, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, Kip, you're so handsome, blah 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 blah. You're
having that shallow conversation.
I'm like, hey, let's meet for dinner. And they're like,
she says, I'll be the girl at the third urinal.
It's you know, it's just not working out. And
all right, thank you. Good luck to you.
That's why.
Guy. Hello, Guy.
This is Kathy.
Oh, Kathy. Quickly, Kathy, because then I'm going to get to Guy. Go ahead. You met your husband online.
I met my husband online, but before that, I dated a guy for a short period of time, and when I went to end it, he pulled a gun on me. So I've had the best and the worst of online.
Good. I've had a really good one.
Let me get back on the horse, though.
Guy in Snoqualmie. Hello, Guy.
Hi, Bob. Good morning, guys. I put one on the services that begins with an E, and it's odd for a guy to do that, but my girlfriend and I were having a property dispute, and her friend went underground, and we dated, and I didn't know they were friends, and for 3 days, but as it turns out, I knocked the old gal off, and it really kicked my girlfriend off.
Atta boy.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me summarize. Your girlfriend used online dating as espionage to spy on you in a property dispute, but you had the last laugh because you knocked the little tramp up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and
beautiful.
You know what I found is I left myself up there, and I tell you what, I had a lot of desperate women, I think, called me up because every time we talked, and then if we really did meet, it was a sure date.
Sure date.
I think you said that.
Yeah, every single time it's a sure thing.
It is. It's like pigeons on a fence post, is what my friend tells me.
Nice. Very nice.
No, wait a minute. You hear Guy, right? You know that Guy's not a handsome, studly, Abercrombie & Fitch type, but hear the other guy, the ripped young man.
Yeah.
He can't find anything. Well, why is that guy?
Well, I tell you what, I'm 6'1". I've got size 14 shoes. I think that once we meet, that has something to do with it.
Oh my God.
And these women actually, they talk to you on the phone or something before you meet, or just type to you?
Actually, we have to type. I'm not a very good typer either, so I really do get to the point, usually. And if the woman stays on with you, you're in pretty good shape.
Right.
I explain that, so I'm pretty much just a...
You actually tell her about your National Endowment for the Arts before you meet?
Somewhat. I'm a scoundrel also, though, and
you?
I don't argue that point. I am a scoundrel.
You sound very much... He sounds like... What's his name? Jabba. Jabba the Hutt.
I'm very honest, upfront about it. You know, I tell him what I'd like to do a lot of times, and then sometimes I think I pique their curiosity.
Also that of the FBI.
Ruth, hello.
Hi.
Ruth, you're on.
About 8 years ago, I used to surf the web, meet guys. I went to Detroit. I went to New York to visit them. The guy I'm with now, we met on a phone chat line. We've been together 8 years. 8 years ago, I met a guy from India online.
Mm-hmm.
Lost track with him. I went on MySpace. Boom, there he is. I found him. We're friends. We talk. Nothing sexual about it. You know, we're good friends.
You had a thing with him.
I used to check my 15-year-old out. That's why I'm there.
You had a thing with this guy 8 years ago, though, right?
Yeah.
The guy in India.
Yeah.
So you can, and that's another weird thing that happens on the internet, hooking up with old lovers platonically, but knowing that you had a thing and you shared something, and that even though they're thousands of miles away, you can still sort of, in your mind, you have a little compartment for this guy from India, don't you, though?
Yeah. I mean, he's a good-looking guy, and we had a good time, but he's married now. I'm married now. And
he's an Indian guy that you dated, but...
Yes.
Now it's just platonic. It's online.
Exactly.
He can type.
And I found out he's rich, so...
He's rich.
Well, everybody's rich online.
By the breast you are getting in your shirt right now, but you have been born with them naturally, which is very good for me.
Thank you, Ruth. 1-800-252-1025. All right, just quickly, is online the preferred way to meet people? Mark.
Well, Bob, my kids are just now getting into high school where they're wanting to do the dating scene. And you know what bugs me is that I want to meet families. I want to know, you know, when my daughter says, hey, here's Johnny online, I want to say, yeah, what's Johnny's dad do for a living?
Right.
And so I'm old-fashioned that way, where I see a marriage as an alliance between two families. And I don't see how the whole online thing...
And it's less and less so. I mean, marriage started out... And you may be a dinosaur, by the way, because marriage started out as arranged by families... as a way to protect bloodlines and wealth, and now marriage has really turned into two individuals who love each other. And I agree with you. I think it's a horrible, horrible development.
Nothing in that.
Sean Alexander, our attorney friend.
Good morning.
You do date online, right?
I have, yes. I do.
And?
It's interesting. I get to meet women that are interested in me, and I'm interested in them. The whole thing is a little bizarre at first. You do get to meet a lot of different people, but I've had some bad experiences. So you really got to keep your personal information out of it.
Don't like go on the radio and talk about it or anything like that.
Well, no, I mean, it's different.
There's a thin line between fraud and embellishment.
He's right, absolutely, Sean. Thank you. I'm sorry we're running out of time. Betty, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I have found that I've had problems with guys online. They tend to creep me out before I would ever meet them in person, but... I'm currently shopping for a woman to join my boyfriend and I as a third party, and it seems to be a convenient way to go.
Online?
Yeah.
We're going to be on the radio with this girl for a long
time,
we're
not.
Aren't we?
Are you serious, Betty, or are you just like, this will get past the
I'm
call screener
serious.
Every time?
It's difficult to walk into a bar with your boyfriend and try to approach a girl because
why are you doing that?
For fun?
Is it fun for you or fun for him?
Both.
It is really both?
How come you guys don't get to get another guy? I was just wondering, because they did this in Sex and the City, too.
It freaks us out. Yeah. No, it freaks us out. Two girls would be I think there's some natural explanation for that. I don't know what it is.
Well, absolutely there's a natural explanation for it.
Of course Eric knows it.
Well, sure. It's because when you look at the dawn of humanity, the men were all about spreading their seed, of course.
Right.
But the dominant factor was you as a man had to make sure that you were impregnating the women that you intended to. When another man would encroach on your territory, then you are not evolutionarily doing your job.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, but I mean, why do you guys get the benefit of two women and we aren't allowed the benefit of two men?
You were meant to serve us in that way.
Well, I want a woman. I don't want another man.
I mean, by nature, I realize we've evolved out of that a bit, quite a bit, unfortunately. As an actor, director, and producer, Forrest Whitaker has over 100 film credits, and the critics are saying that his portrayal of dictator Idi Amin may be the crowning achievement of what's been an incredible career. Diverse, memorable, award-winning roles. The Crying Game, Platoon. Oh, let's see, The Color
of Money.
The Color of Money. I couldn't read your writing, Joe. Of course, The Color of Money. Good Morning Vietnam, fantastic. Phenomenon. We interviewed him once at a junket for Species. We've met Forrest Whitaker before. Last King of Scotland, getting Oscar buzz. Forrest Whitaker, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Congratulations on everything. You're a great actor.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You are, and you also have, and this is, I'm so excited to see this movie, because you also have this warm, genuine, like, could sit down on someone's porch and be sort of, you know, self-effacing and nice and easygoing. You said, thank you, I'm so polite and everything. How do you play a brutal, ruthless dictator, and where do you draw that from?
I mean, you do look inside of yourself. I mean, to try to find the darker places of yourself and the darker, you know, sort of rooms in the closet of your mind, really.
But you're Forrest Whitaker. You're a nice. You don't go home and kick the cat behind closed doors, I'm sure.
No, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of keys and clues, and I didn't really look at him as being like evil and dark. I just looked at him to try to figure out the way he thought and felt about certain things, and sort of the paranoia and the fears, and I started to set those things in play in my head, and then the character started to come alive.
And on the outside, Idi Amin was a pretty nice, likable guy.
He did do the funny thing, right?
Well, I mean, he's definitely a complex guy. I think we have an image of him as like this sort of mad dictator, general, or whatever, which is a part of it. But then there's a lot of other sides of him, and I think the movie gets to show that. Certainly, you're going to see some of the madness and some of the brutality of Idi Amin, but you'll also see the sort of charisma that it takes to be able to rise to power in the way that he did.
Right, the charisma. And it's Saddam Hussein. And I'll bet, you know, if you weren't on his, you know, genocide list, Saddam Hussein was probably fun to hang out with.
Probably picked up a dinner check.
He had a really cool place.
Yep.
Big TV.
I met this woman in she won a Pulitzer last year for her book on these sort of genocidal figures, and she had seen the film, and she told me one of the things that she loved about the film was this charisma, about this ability for these men, because she's met a number of these different men, to like bring you in and for you to feel like you're one of the only people on the planet. And when you're in that, you feel happy. It's like you feel like, oh, he likes me. He's taking me in. I'm one of them. You know. Mm. I think that's what happens in the movie.
Over 100 movie credits to your name, and I know you've played lots of different characters. Is there one character out of all of those that sits at the top for you? Is there one character, one role that maybe was the most satisfying, or is it hard to make that award amongst all your films?
It's really difficult, because I really feel proud of a lot of films. I think that maybe three films that really strike me really strongly. I mean, one was Bird, which is Charlie Parker.
Right.
The other one was an art film called Ghost Dog, you know, The Way of the Samurai, because it taught me a lot, too.
What was the name of that again?
Ghost Dog,
The Way
Ghost
of the Samurai.
Dog.
It's a special little film. I really like it. And then, honestly, The Last King. I really am very proud of The Last King of Scotland and playing this character. I think it was one of the most fulfilling roles I've ever got the opportunity to play in my whole career.
In Bird, you worked with Clint Eastwood, Color of Money, Paul Newman. You worked with so many great actors. Is there somebody out there that you'd say, hey, I'd just about work for free? Well, not for free. Nobody wants to work for free. But I'd love to do a movie with this guy, and I haven't yet.
You know, director, actor-director. I mean, I always wanted to work with Coppola. I thought that would be interesting. I always wanted to work with this guy. It's actually a guy who did direct this movie called Hero or House. You know House of Flying Daggers?
Yeah, I do.
I like that movie, and I like the director, Zhang Zimu. I mean, there's just a bunch of great actors out there that I like to work with. I'd like to work with Sean again. I'd like to work with Denzel. I'd like to work with a number of really, really talented actors.
Yeah, you direct, too, Forrest, and you don't direct very often. Is that because the work schedule of acting gets in the way of it?
He's in such demand.
Well, I mean, you did Waiting to Exhale in 95, then Hope Floats in 98, and First Daughter in 04, but you haven't done very much in the way of directing.
No, I try. I mean, I've directed every 3 or 4 years, and I probably won't direct again for another year. So it takes like 2 years out of your life, you know, at least just working on a movie and doing it, and maybe longer if you're developing the project. I just really want to find, particularly right now, the right movie for me to want to spend the next 2 years on the project. Right now I'm just developing I'm developing this one project on the Lord's Resistance Army that I hope will turn into a good script, but I don't know. We'll see.
When you were young and just getting started, and tell us a little about that, did you have a ton of confidence, or did you build that up in your career? Did you know, I'm born to do this, everything's going to be great? Some people are like that. Or did you struggle and work hard and really polish your craft with hard work?
I mean, honestly, in the beginning of my career, I really wasn't sure if this was the right career choice for me. And honestly, you know, because I wasn't sure I'd be able to do it good or well enough, you know. And that went deep into my career. I mean, where at certain points I was like, if I don't end up doing something more special, and if my work doesn't get any better, I'm going to try to find out what my destiny is, whatever else I'm supposed to do. And that happened almost into 10 years into my career. I was still struggling with that. And I don't remember when finally something happened where I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. This is what I'm supposed to do.
You're a family guy as well. You got a house full of kids, a nice wife. Do you take the kids to see Daddy as a brutal dictator?
The littlest, like the 8 and 10 year old, they won't get a chance to see it.
Right. Age appropriate, Joe.
See it, like the trailer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's funny.
The older ones, the oldest are 14 and 16. I was like really strongly debating about the 14-year-old for quite some time, and then finally I feel like it has like a lot of historical merit and it's entertaining, and I talked to her about a couple of the scenes that were going to happen in the movie. And my 16-year-old, yeah, definitely he should see it.
Forrest, you once said that you had to take showers to try to get Idi Amin to leave you. You had to wash those darker passions away. Mm-hmm. I'm sure when you take on a role, whether it's Charlie Parker or Idi Amin, you really have to become that person. What did you do to sort of become normal again after playing Idi Amin?
That was one of the things, and the other was like getting rid of all the things that would try to remind me and try to get my speech back in place. And I really think that one of the biggest things was that went off to do another movie not so long, right, pretty soon after. And that really helped me get rid of the character.
Because
I wanted to work on something else. I wanted
replacing
to,
it with a different character at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, try to like have to focus and change my energy to do something else. And it kind of like, you know, it forced me to get rid of it. Even though, you know, there's certain things that stay with you from a character, like little phrases, little sounds, you know? Mm. There's a couple that stay with me. And every time I say, I'm always thinking, oh.
Right. Do you think the guy who played Ray Charles,
Jamie Foxx,
he can always do Ray Charles? So could you always like do Idi Amin at parties if people ask you to, that sort of thing?
I hope not.
Come on, do your Idi Amin.
I hope not too. I'd rather
do certain things that, you know, because I've been seeing the movie like a few times lately, because it's been, you know, like these screenings and things. I've started remembering like the way I spoke, but until then, I kind of like some of it had left me, you know.
Last King of Scotland, Forrest Whitaker, actor, director, producer, 100 films. It's an honor to talk to you, sir, and enjoy and have a good time.
Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure.
Three weeks ago, one of my dreams came true. I finally got to see something I've always wanted to witness live. I finally saw someone get hit by a car. Nailed. This guy got hit right in the hip. That's your center of gravity, and that sends you flipping through the air like Eddie Gordo from Tekken when someone doesn't know how to do combos and they're just hitting the buttons randomly. I always just miss it, right? I'm looking, and then I go to order my twisty cone. Oh, what? What happened?
Dane Cook has had the number one comedy album in America for a year straight now. He's got a new HBO special. He was asked to host this year's premiere edition of Saturday Night Live, the preview, and or what do they call it? Is it the premiere?
Season premiere.
And he has a movie co-starring Jessica Simpson. Heck, he might even have Jessica Simpson, depending on which tabloid you believe. Needless to say, things are going very well for Dane. And if you like to laugh, you'll certainly want to check out Employee of the Month, Dane Cook. Welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Hey, it's good to be here. What's up?
Not much. Well, everything for you. Everything's good, huh?
It certainly doesn't suck.
Now,
it's been a good run.
Let's get the Jessica Simpson stuff out of the way first. Is any of that true?
Nothing. It's all superfluous. We're very good friends and of course right. co-stars. But it was to be expected that after all that stuff with her divorce happened, the first guy in her proximity was probably going to get paired.
Right.
I ain't complaining. She's a beautiful woman. She's a great person. And it's kind of flattering, but no, it is not true.
Not true. If she came at you this afternoon and said, I've been thinking about it, and you know what, this is, let's go for it, would you be available?
Well, the thing is, she's such a, the relationship that we have now is really great. It's a great friendship, and I've been seeing somebody, so it probably wouldn't be the right time for that. But She's certainly not somebody that you would kick out of bed, that's for sure. Yeah.
She comes over, she's drunk, she's willing, she's got a consent release form for you, there's no strings attached, come on.
She's going to bring a blood test, too,
Test. It's been Nick Lachey for 2 years, and Nick Lachey ain't bringing home the bacon. Dane,
sure.
Save me!
No, he would say, I wouldn't want to spoil the beautiful friendship we have.
That is absolutely true. Because I grew up with five sisters, so I've got that respect thing with the women. You know, I know how it goes. So I wouldn't want to be a heartbreaker, and I wouldn't want mine broken either.
Speaking of women, by the way, we were looking at some of the reviews. It's getting great reviews, and then we found a woman who didn't like the movie, and she said some funny stuff. Actually, yes, in the PI, Manny loves the movie. He says it's a funny movie, due in large part to the actors involved. He raves about you. He says Simpson plays it straight, and everyone is gleefully over the top. Then, same building, by the way, these two newspapers are in the same building.
Yeah.
Moira McDonald says, Simpson doesn't act at all. Luckily, the costume department has figured out that by putting her in a series of very low-cut tops, attention will be diverted from her expressionless face.
Ouch. She's a hater.
She says, her breasts appear to be trying to escape from the movie, perhaps in search of a better one.
All right, she's flat. We know that.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you.
So there you go. But my wife, I'm looking forward to it. Tell me a little bit about the movie. What's the basic premise, Employee of the Month, and how do you have fun making it?
Yeah, it's a real simple equation here. It's almost like a great four-chord song that you can't stop listening to. Really simple idea. Two guys, myself and Dax Shepard, who work at a bulk store called Super Club, which is Costco, basically.
Basically.
And I'm like a slacker, bottom of the totem pole guy, don't really care about doing anything more than I have to, versus Dax, his character Vince, is like the big fish in the small pond. He wins Employee of the Month 17 times in a row, and he's kind of this narcissistic, holier-than-thou guy. And when Simpson's character comes to work there, we get into her personal file, and what we learn is that she's got this fetish where she only wants to basically get with the guy that wins Employee of the Month.
Oh.
So now you've got a
serious competition,
battle of epic proportions.
That's
between
right.
myself and Dax.
And do they do the whole picture thing like they do at Costco, where they have the pictures of the Employee of the Month hanging in a frame?
You win every month, and a big 8x10 goes up on the wall, up on the placard there. And of course, I've never gotten one, so now it's I have to get myself in peak physical condition, tip top shape, and take Vince out.
To play a loser slacker,
very difficult.
Well, right now you're at the top of your game. Everything's coming up roses, going well for you. Do you have any experience of a horrible job? Most comedians have some terrible job that no one believes they ever did. Do you have something like that you can draw from?
Oh, I have so many bad job experiences. As a comic early in my career, I had everything from plowing snow during the winters. I was in a plowing company. I was a dietary aide. I was working at video stores. I worked at a video store. It was in a really seedy part of town. And, we would rent adult films. And there was this one really creepy guy that would come in, and he would rent adult films like 10 at a time. And then he would leave, and then he'd return all 10 within an hour. Yeah, he would put them on the counter, and he would quickly be like, yeah, three of these weren't very good. This one's great. It was like just, I used to have tongs that I would just put them in the bin with. I didn't want to touch them.
I just read, Dane, congratulations, by the way, on Vegas. They announced you're going to be headlining a big show there. Would you ever want to, like, hunker down in Vegas like Elton John and do a Red Piano or, do a show for an extended period?
I think that, certainly the history of Vegas and some of the people that have worked down there, especially in the comedy game, it would be flattering to even have an offer like that. At this point in my career, certainly love traveling around, seeing the world, and the new environments. But, I suppose if I got a little older, have a family, it wouldn't be a bad idea to settle down in one place, and that's the place that everybody wants to come to.
What's your favorite spot in the whole world of every place you've ever been?
Boston, Massachusetts. That's my hometown, and I'm at home. When I go there, I know the people, and I just have a lot of fond memories of my early years as an entertainer back there with big dreams.
Wait a minute, Dane. I used to work there, WAAF.
I just got off the phone with WAAF.
The Bob and Zip Show. Wait a minute.
Man, I used to go into AAF back there all the time.
How old are you?
I am 34.
Shoot, I might remember you from a young...
He's 6 years old. He's a funny guy. He's coming up...
Were you in some comedy competitions 20 years ago? Probably not.
He's
no.
killing the Cub Scouts,
comedy riot.
He's 14. All right. Well,
hey, Dane, when Torgasm rolled through Seattle, you were under the weather. You had a bad case of flu. And Robbie J. and Gary came in. We appreciated that. But next time you come through, you got to come in the room, man. I really missed seeing you.
Absolutely. Nothing better than being in there with you guys. And I'm glad that I got a chance to chat with you a little bit today.
Dane Cook in Los Angeles and the movie Employee of the Month. Thank you, Dane.
Enjoy it. You got it. Thanks, guys.
Ralph Paul didn't see enough food on his plate, so he left a restaurant without paying. See, he was charged with a misdemeanor for this, by the way, in Largo, Florida. The deal was, Paul, and I've been in this situation... Paul ordered a meal. Maybe it was the first time he'd been to the restaurant. We'll find out. The meal came and he went, oh my God. This is one of those places where they give you like one asparagus spear. They slice two slices of a carrot sideways.
That'd be $17.
Little piece of parsley. A piece of chicken that the chicken didn't even miss. The chicken's still alive.
I feel for my status.
And they call it a meal. And by the way, they charge more for those kinds of meals. Do you ever notice the smaller the meal, the more expensive the restaurant, if it's especially in the city? So here's his defense. He did not dine in Dash because he did not dine. The restaurant brought him something that was not acceptable. And he walked out. Now, maybe he should have told them he was walking out. He didn't tell them he's walking out, right?
I don't think so.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Just maybe. But in any event, he's got a lawyer. And the jury is deliberating. And then looks like they've exonerated him.
I think he's going to get off the hook on what it was being called, defrauding a restaurant.
Because he didn't eat the food. And it doesn't seem that he meant to defraud anyone. Ralph Paul, 54 years old, Largo, Florida. Welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Did I have the story pretty close to right?
I'm afraid not.
See, a lot of these little stories, yeah, the newspapers have to fit them in that little Florida box in the USA
right.
Today thing.
Right.
They leave out facts all the time.
Well, they not only leave out facts, the guy who's writing it does not fact check, and he figures no one will ever read this story because no one ever reads that page.
I'll show him. Stick me on page 27.
Almost every single time we read one of these stories, when we get the person on, they go, "That's not what happened at all." What really happened?
Okay. First of all, I did not dine in Dash. I picked my girlfriend up from Tampa International Airport in the evening of Friday, March 31st.
And we decided
to get some dinner on the way home. So we drove past Angelino's Italian restaurant where we had both dined before and had good experiences. So we said, well, let's go here. We parked the car. It was Friday. It was pretty busy. The maitre d' seated us right away.
Angelino, welcome back, Angelino. It's so good to see you again. Sorry, I'm missing you. You're so, he's a cute girl you bring today. Where is she from, huh?
Okay, so we're
adding a little color. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Well, I appreciate color.
Okay.
So
you'll be charged for that.
We looked at the menu, and I ordered a meal that is called Shrimp and Scallops Verdura, which was under the classification of a seafood sauté.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a description below it where they talked about jumbo shrimp and scallops and...
in the beautiful red wine the sauce. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the sauce and the vegetables.
Now
and
he's getting
and
it. Now
then
he
the last thing said, on a bed of pasta. I knew I was going to get pasta.
Okay.
Now, I also have to say that there was another part of the menu where they had pasta meals. Okay, like spaghetti and so forth. And I was not really looking for a spaghetti meal. I wanted a seafood meal. And I had no problem with it being on a bed of pasta, but I figured there would be a reasonable amount of seafood with the meal.
Enough to see. You would have some shrimp in there and some substance.
Right, right. So when the meal came out, it came out in a very large plate. And I could, across the top was the sauce. I saw two small shrimp that were a small bite size and three small scallops. And I assumed that there were more underneath. But I actually had a question already because it felt like it was almost all pasta. So I began picking out the seafood first, assuming that there was more below the surface. Well, it turns out there were five small bite-sized shrimp and five small scallops, and probably a pound of pasta.
So you ate the shrimp on top, expecting more to be in the bottom.
Well, I did, expecting there was going to be more. And during my exploration,
when I picked them up,
I ate them. It probably sounds like not a normal way to eat, but I was already getting curious.
Right.
Curiouser and curiouser.
All right, so when I realized there were only five bites of seafood, when the waitress came back to see how we were doing, I said, you know, I'm disappointed. I thought there would be more seafood. Could you check with the chef and see if I got the right amount? I got five shrimp and five scallops.
This is my wife, all the way, by the way. This is Lisa. Yeah. Absolutely. You and my wife would both be on honor because she hates it when someone makes it appear you're going to get more than you actually get.
Right. So at this point, I thought there was a mistake that maybe they forgot to put the full amount there. So the waitress left and came back, and then she politely told me that the chef said five and five is all you get. And I looked at her and I said, well, do me a favor and ask the manager to come out. So she politely left, and a few minutes later, a man came to the table and asked me what the problem was, and I explained it to him. And as my girlfriend described it at the trial, which is over, by the way, I heard you say that it was being deliberated.
It says you were,
I was acquitted.
It says you were exonerated. No, I got that part right.
Okay, all right. As my girlfriend described him, he became red in the face, and the veins were popping out of his neck. And he looked at me, and he said,
"Paulie Walnuts."
He said, "This is the way we've been serving it for 16 years.
Let him deal for it.
Seafood is expensive."
What did he say?
"This is the way we've served it for 16 years, and seafood is expensive." Now, I didn't mention anything about price. I just explained to him that I had expected it to be primarily a seafood meal with pasta below it.
Sure.
And I was expecting that maybe they would bring out more seafood or offer to let me order a different meal. He made no attempt at any type of mediation or anything to try to make me happy. He just blurted out those statements and walked away from the table. So now I'm sitting there looking at a pound of pasta and thinking about my interaction with him and being very displeased. So I looked at my girlfriend and I said, you know what? I think I'm going to send it back. So when the waitress returned to the table, I told her, I said, look, I'm not happy with the meal. Please take it back and inform the manager that I would like a refund. And she very politely took it away.
Wow.
And that was the last we heard of it. So we shared my girlfriend's meal because they didn't offer me another meal. And then after the meal, we ordered coffee and dessert. And when the check came, I was not credited for the meal that I'd returned. So I spoke to the waitress and I said, you forgot to credit my meal. And she said, oh no, the manager told me not to give you a credit. And I said, well, I think you probably should have told me that. Please get the manager out. So,
another man came out in
about 2 minutes and he identified himself as one of the owners. And as he approached the table, he grabbed my bill and stuck it in his pocket. And he said, He didn't ask me what happened, how was the meal. He said, my employees told me what happened, and you ate the seafood. You have to pay the whole check. No attempt at customer satisfaction
perspective. Ralph, are there other customers witnessing all of this?
There were customers all around, but you have to realize it was a very busy evening, and there was a lot of background noise, and the discussions were never loud or uncivil,
okay.
So I don't really believe anybody around us knew what was going on.
There wasn't pounding of tables or anything like that?
No. That's not the way I do business.
But at some point, you are charged with the crime. The police entered the scene here at some point, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, the next part I'm going to tell you is critical, and if you need me to speed it up, let me know, but it's not going to take too much longer.
Okay,
but
keep going.
the next part is very critical, okay? After he said that, I felt the need to explain to him why I turned the meal back in and why I felt I deserved a credit. So I explained about the menu I believed was misleading. I did not think I was ordering a pasta meal, and I ate the 10 pieces of seafood because I was convinced there was had to be more below. And I said, look, I am perfectly willing to pay for the meal and all of the food I ate, but I will not pay for the food that I returned. And his response to me, and this was very curious, he said, either you pay the full check or I will seek my other remedies. And I thought, that's a very strange way to put it. But, you know, with things going on real fast, I didn't have time to digest it and realize what he meant at the time.
All right, I get it. Ralph, he's a moron. But I got to ask you, was it worth it?
Well, you know, that's a question that I had to ask myself over and over again, because I made several decisions in the course of this where I could have taken a much easier way out. I could have paid the full check and nothing would have happened. And I just want to say one thing before I move on to this. Five times I explained it and offered to pay for everything I ate. Five times he refused my payment.
No, we got that. We got okay. The part. You, right, so, I think you did everything right, except...
When I got home, I got a call from a sheriff's deputy asking
I could
me
have
if
him suing me by the end
I
of this call if
with
I wanted
without
to.
Paying, and I said, yes, I did, and I explained why. And he said, well, either you come right back here or... you will be arrested. And I felt that on a matter of principle that that it would not be proper for me to pay for a meal that was misrepresented when I had no customer service, and the owner refused payment.
I got it. You're sort of restating all of the obvious stuff.
Okay.
So but the so human interest the human interest question for me is, you know, there's a lot of grief for you. How much was the meal?
The meal was only the meal was $15.99.
I mean, well, how much do you make an hour in your normal life?
Right. It wasn't a matter of the amount.
It's a matter of principle.
Yes.
Wouldn't the principle be best served by never going there again and telling all your friends?
Well, that's certainly the second half of the principle, because I would not have gone back there.
Right.
But I felt like I didn't owe him for that portion of the meal, and therefore, since they made no attempt at customer service, that if, you know, if we...
We've got all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, we got that, Ralph.
No.
Okay.
We got that.
At some point,
you know,
though,
we don't bury shrimp of scallops in pasta. We bury customers. That's what we do. And
right.
If you'd like more seafood, here's what we'll do. We'll go into my little boat, the Stugat, and you can harvest your own shrimp.
Oh,
and your own scallops. I got these special shrimp harvesting boots. They're made of concrete.
And I know this caused you grief, Ralph. This caused, obviously, the restaurant owner grief. But at some point, this evolved into a jury trial.
It's not worth it.
You had 12 of your peers here trying to decide this. How did you demand a jury to hear this trial?
Well, a second-degree misdemeanor, you are not allowed a jury. But the prosecution somehow demanded and got a jury.
Oh, he wanted a jury.
Oh, yeah. This restaurant guy, he just lives to piss off customers. He enjoys it.
Hey, Ralph, can I take a question, different line of questioning, if I may?
Not at all.
This started out as a date. You picked up a girl at the airport. You took her to a restaurant. You bitched about not enough food on your plate. You ate half of hers. Did you score at the end of the night, Ralph? Did you get some? I hope I'm not out of line with that question.
Well, I'm not going to answer a question.
Okay. He's not going to answer
what
that.
A gentleman. You're a gentleman, Ralph. I appreciate
all right.
that.
Ralph Paul. It's an interesting scenario, Ralph. Let's point out again, you did win.
That's correct.
Attaboy.
Was it worth it?
Yes, for my dignity and my honor, it was worth it.
This is the night.
Ralph, welcome back to Angelina. Welcome back. It's a beautiful. This is a new girl, Ralph. You come out after playing. Oh, she's a big one, Ralph. She's a lucky boy. Want you on a private booth in the back? Oh, very good, very good, very good.
Look at the skies.
Excuse me. There's not enough shrimp in this dish.
No, Ralph. You want the shrimp?
Five tiny pieces of shrimp, five scallops. I want my money back.
But Ralph, you already eat all the five of the shrimp and all the five of the scallop. We can't give you the money back. You already eat the shrimp and scallop.
I didn't like it. It's too much pasta.
Well, I could tell you to eat what your date has eaten, but the fat brought all the clean plate. So I guess nothing for poor Ralph to eat.
That's the strangest spot guest I think we've ever had. We call those spot guests, by the way. We read about weird people in the news and we call them. And during the beginning of that call, he mentioned the name of the restaurant. We are now trying to get the other side of the story from the owner of the restaurant, if we can. If you just tuned in, Ralph Paul went into a seafood experience with his girlfriend, a date.
Picked her up at the airport.
Got the dish, which was seafood, on a bed of pasta. Now, that didn't sound too bad to me. Five little shrimp, he said, and five scallops.
That sounds like a pretty reasonable serving.
I mean, my butt. No way.
Depends on the size, right?
You said jumbo shrimp, and it sounded like they put those little baby bay shrimp, you know, the tiny ones that you throw on top of a good Caesar salad or something.
All right, let's assume he's telling the truth, yeah. And it was a small dish.
Yeah.
In the end, he didn't want to pay it. He did all the right things. He asked for the waiter. He asked for the manager.
Twice.
He sent it back.
Mm-hmm.
He ate part of it, and they basically were saying, look, you ate part of it.
Well, he ate the main part. If you were to go to a steakhouse and you get your meal, you eat your...
Send back the broccoli.
You eat your steak and say, this potato was just, you know...
The bone and the broccoli. The, yeah,
yeah, that steak was too small.
Rockfish is here. Rockfish, you have a day off because it's raining, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Rockfish, you're on the weekend still?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be on Saturday night, 7 to midnight. But I have a question.
Yes.
During this trial, did the prosecution, like, did they... have Exhibit A? Was there a plate of the pasta and so that the jury could see what it looked like?
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I turn your attention to this amply proportioned dinner here with five, as you can see.
Right, the way they have the way they have them out at various restaurants where they're, you know, it's been sitting for 3 weeks and a little mold's growing on it and it doesn't even look healthy.
It's actually plastic.
Yeah.
I would just think the jury would want to see what the meal actually looked like.
Well, he got off on a jury, right?
He was exonerated.
Yeah,
so he wins. And by the way, I'm kind of on his side. But the weird thing about this is that's a certain kind of person that will go to war for $11. I mean, or 15, well, whatever. That's a certain kind of person will nitpick over $4.
I hear you.
I mean, is there anybody out there who went to war legally
for $15.99
over something small? Anybody out there? We're trying to reach the restaurant. I don't know if we'll get them or not. It's 11 a.m. now. We can't get them.
11 a.m. now. They're probably getting ready for the lunchtime rush, you know?
1-800-252-1025. Is there anybody out there who totally empathizes with this guy? You went nuclear for something really tiny.
It's the principle.
That's what he said, for my integrity, my honor. Right. I don't know how this affects his honor. Is that what he said at the end, his honor?
His dignity.
His dignity.
Well, dude, first off, like I said, Ralph, you're on a date. You know, is this girl ever going to take it? I'm going to call her up real quick. Hello?
That's who I'd like to talk to.
You know? Yeah, I'm sure she's taking Ralph's call on a constant basis.
Fight for my right to shrimp and then scallops, Ralph. You're the man.
1-800-252-1025. Is there anybody out there who went to war over something we would consider tiny?
They say pick your battles in this world. There's some that are worth fighting and some that you might should just let pass.
That's a valuable lesson I've learned recently.
Really? What happened to you?
Well, just picking your battles, just in general. Instead of bitching about every single thing that happens to you.
Did you have something you gave up on? Was there a moment?
No, I mean, nothing.
Moment
I mean,
clarity?
It's just
nothing he can mention here, because it's part of the restraining order that he can't talk about it. Did you ever go to nuclear war over something really small? Chris in Bellevue, hello.
Hi. I had to take a day off work once to fight a crazy ticket I got in Bellevue.
What did you do?
There's a law in Bellevue that says you can't park your car on the street with the principal purpose of offering it for sale. It was parked in front of my house with a for sale sign on it. I got the $25 ticket, and I thought that was crazy, so I took a whole day off work to fight the $25, and I won.
You won, even though you were breaking the law? That's a whole other topic.
The problem was that you couldn't park your car for the principal purpose of offering it for sale on a public street. I said it was parked for the principal purpose of parking in front of my house, The ancillary purpose, by the way, I'm a lawyer, was that it happened to be for sale at the time.
That's
right,
good.
No, you nailed him, buddy.
Okay, for the principal purpose.
And it's to keep the corner lot from becoming a used car lot at every intersection.
So as long as you can argue that the principal purpose was that the Pacific Northwest storms wash your car and keep it clean, and then leaving it at the mall was, outdoors, was not to sell the car, I mean, that's a stupid law.
Yeah, so I just had to make the point, and I took a whole bit of work through all the other cases to make my $25 point, but I just had to do it.
All right, because you're a lawyer, and winning an argument is worth more than $25 to you.
Well, I thought that I was unjustly accused, and I had to make my point.
All right, do you have a woman?
Yeah, I'm married.
And it goes well. Do you do what all guys do? Do you lose on purpose for your woman once in a while so that you can keep eHarmony going?
No, I get accused of never backing down.
Ah, okay. All right. Some of them like that.
Yeah. Well, when I find one, I'll let you know.
All right. 1-800-252-1025. Who out there went to war over something small? Debbie in Bothell. Are you on, Debbie?
Oh, yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Two times I went to war over a small amount of money. The first time was downtown Seattle at the parking lot at Space Needle. It was one of those situations where I had to pay by credit card, and it was for $5. You put in your credit card, it spit out a ticket. It gave me 1 minute worth of parking, so that made me have to pay again. So I called the parking lot and fought with them for 3 weeks, and they finally did send me a check for $5.
Now, it wasn't really worth your time.
No, but it was the principle of the matter.
Right. This is your instinct, is to
yes,
fight when you're right.
Yes,
And we all have that, by the way. We all, when we feel that something unjust has been done to us.
Well, I think my principle, the point that I like to make is that if they did that to everybody, 100 people, they would be making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Stealing, I believe
yes.
it's called.
Yes.
Fraud.
Yes.
Sleazy.
Exactly. So, and then another time, I accidentally signed up for something on the internet by just clicking yes, and they started charging my credit card monthly $9. I was a little slow on the uptake on that one. It took me about 6 months before I realized this charge wasn't supposed to be there, but it ended up being $45, and I went all the way to the vice president of the company and got my money back on that one.
Now, a lot of people would just give up.
Nope, not me.
What would you say to those people who give up?
Well, if you want to throw your money away and have people take advantage of you over and over and over again, then that's what you do. But
right.
I don't like to be taken advantage of.
Right. All right. Joe, you
not
just...
Not even after a couple of drinks?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do that based on the principle that, yeah, some
you
people...
You don't mind being taken advantage of that much, though, do you?
You know, I've got to admit, I'm pretty easy to take it.
You're an easy mark.
Depending on, you know...
After a couple of drinks, yeah, baby.
Depending on, how much I have at the time. It's, if I didn't have it, I would complain, but sometimes I don't complain when I should.
I hate it when someone does something that they absolutely shouldn't do.
Yeah,
Dennis.
Yes. Good morning.
You're on.
Hi, I'm Dennis. I'm Blazing Bagels in Redmond. We sued the city of Redmond for $1.
$1,
attaboy. What'd that cost you?
Now, your court case was well known, Dennis. It involved a sign, right?
It involved me holding a sign or a sign person holding a sign on a public right of way on a sidewalk in an industrial area in Redmond, which happens to be a very busy area also.
Was this the dancing dude with the Walkman sign thing?
Right. Okay. He used to play the air guitar for us.
That's been really popular in a number of areas. I thought it was one guy, but it's like Santa Claus. They're everywhere.
Well, they're everywhere, yeah. And in city of Seattle, city of Bellevue, and in city of Issaquah, and most other cities around the country, it's very illegal. In fact, you have the freedom of speech to do so. So says the city of Redmond. But about 6 months later, they came in and said, you can't do this anymore. And so the Times did a story on us, and a law firm out of Washington, D.C., took our case on free of charge all the way to U.S. Supreme Court.
U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes.
All the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but it hasn't gone that far yet. We won twice in federal court. Two times, two different federal judges ruled in our favor and said the ordinance was unconstitutional. And we were allowed to go out there and carry a sign. And
for $1?
$1 we sued them for. And the city appealed that. So far, it's cost the city over $200,000 to fight our case.
So they're like this guy in the restaurant. You, in other words, the city of Redmond could have dropped $1 into an envelope, sent it to you, and said, we give up.
Could have, yep. Or they could have just ignored it and let us and the three other companies that were carrying signs down here do their thing and carry a sign, and everything would have gone away and nothing would have happened.
Yeah, but Dennis, you got to realize that when you're doing something, you got a guy in a bagel sign, but if they let you do that, then here comes the guy with the adult video store sign out there, and he's dancing on the sidewalk next to a woman who's dancing bent over in front of him. You got to keep these people in check.
Is that what you sure? Are you sure that's going to happen?
I'm telling you, it's a slippery slope. It's the infamous slippery slope you always hear about.
And that's what the sign will say, too.
Right.
Well, the problem was they said no, anybody can carry a sign, but what they said, but you can't because we were a commercial business and we had no freedom of speech. But now I'm not taking away anything from realtors. But however, they allowed a realty company or development company the right to carry the sign on the same corner.
Dennis in Redmond sued the city of Redmond for $1. It's still going on. How will it end?
Well, we won our case. We won our appeal, or the city lost their appeal. And now the city has 90 days to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And they may.
If they're really stupid, which we know they are, but if they keep on going, I mean, it will cost them a lot of money then. But we love it because it's free advertisement. It's wonderful. It's been great publicity.
Thank you, Dennis. Larry sued, went to court over a fish. Larry, can you hold on? Because we have to do a break here.
You bet.
You went to court over a fish.
Over a ling cod.
Went to court over a ling cod. Someone else was arrested in a movie theater, sued the theater. Someone else canceled their cell phone, didn't like the fee, and sued over that. Who's gone to war over the smallest things? 1-800-252-1025. We'll do one more segment on this. Who's had the biggest court fight over the smallest thing? The guy from Redmond made national news. Sued the city of Redmond for $1. Kind of makes the fish thing, I mean, it kind of makes the seafood thing look bigger.
That guy was, that's different. For a buck, he wasn't suing for a buck. He was suing for the right to do business, and he was suing on behalf of other business owners. I get that part.
Well, and he was suing for the free advertising. He even admitted it.
Right.
You get a ton of free publicity.
Right.
Larry is on the phone from Everett. Larry, we're going to come to you first. Larry went to court over a fish. Larry.
Good morning, Bob.
What court, what fish?
Everett Municipal Court, and it was a ling cod.
A ling cod.
Yes, sir.
Now, that's a prized fish you catch on the bottom. They can be really big, and they're tasty, and people love them. Were you fishing for it illegally?
No, I wasn't. I was fishing legally.
Well, how is it that you found yourself in court for a ling cod?
Well, I was new to the area, and I knew that these fish existed, and I was out fishing, and I caught this a beautiful fish, and looked in the rec book, and couldn't come up with a description that fit the fish, but it was a nice fish, so I wasn't going to let it go. So I threw it in the boat, and I came into the 12th Street boat launch in Everett, and the fish and game fellow on duty came over to my boat, and he was kind of looking through my boat as I was loading it up, and he goes, well, did you catch anything? And I just kind of stood there because I thought he was being kind of nosy, rutting around in my boat.
His fishing game.
Well, you look at my boat. I said, it's right up there in the 5-gallon bucket. You must have missed it. And I pulled this fish out. And he goes, well, now, he says, I'm not quite sure because it's been so long since I've seen one, but I think this is a ling cod. I said, well, I looked in the regulation book, and I couldn't find anything that fit the description. He said, well, let me get some other literature. So we looked through the literature he had, and we still couldn't come up with a description that fit the fish that I had caught. He said, well, I'm going to have to take this fish to a biologist, and if it's a ling cod, I'll mail you a ticket, and if it's not, I'll have it back to you in time for dinner tonight. Well, I didn't have fish dinner that night.
He did.
And a couple months later, I got a ticket in the mail, and I was like, you know, this just doesn't sit right. If the guy is out
this
there
guy.
To check
Jack catches.
This fishing game guy. This fishing game guy.
To a marine biologist slash bread and butter batter deep fry shop.
He ate the fish. I know he ate the fish.
I'll need another bite. It tastes like Lincoln. I can't quite be sure.
What a rough, difficult person. And now, well, then you were violating a rule because the lingcod was not, it has to be a certain size, doesn't it?
I was within the size limit. I was within the size limit, but the deal was, it was out of season.
Seasonal, yeah. Seasonal catch.
Okay, so you were violating a fishing game rule. They took away your fish. And so even though you were clearly in the wrong, but negligent, you fought it anyway?
I did. I went to court before the judge, and I said, you know, here's the rig book. Here's the information he gave me. There's no sound description of a lingcod. If you're going to have a controlled season on this fish, don't you think there should be a better way to identify it in the literature for us amateurs?
Ooh, good
and
argument.
He just looked at me and he said, this happens all the time. And he charged me $35 court costs and said, don't let it happen again.
And so, did he ever ask the guy to produce the evidence? And he, like, burped and said, no, I can't.
No, nobody ever showed up to uphold their side of the story. There was no biologist. The fish and game guy didn't show up. I was the only one there.
All right, Larry. If he's listening now, I'd love to know how you what's the best way to cook a lingcod?
Batter dipped and deep fried.
There you go. All right. With some chips.
He paid $35 court costs, but he went to get the principle of the thing is the ticket was overturned.
It's not fair, but the onus is always on the fishermen to know the regs, and they change literally daily sometimes.
Mark in Marysville, you were arrested in a movie theater?
Yes, I was.
Is this a Pee Wee Herman kind of a story? Because I'm going to just check. The family show.
What's that?
Never mind. Go ahead. Tell us what happened.
Oh, yeah. Several years ago, me and my wife and kids, my kids at the time were probably 11 and 12, we frequent a movie theater here where we live quite often, and we went to this teeny bopper kind of scary movie, and the movie theater is full of teenagers, and throughout the whole movie, the teenagers are just making all kinds of racket. So I got out of my seat and went and found the first employee I could find, which was the kid tearing tickets, and I told him, you know, you need to come down to the Theater 9, there's a bunch of noise down there. So I went back to my seat and sat down. And there's a gentleman sitting directly behind me, and he yelled out, shut up. So immediately after that, an attendant came to me and asked me to step into the lobby, and I said, what's going on? They said, we need to ask you to leave. I said, what for? They said, you're yelling in the theater. I said, no, it's a gentleman behind me. So they went and got him. He came out and admitted to it, and I went back to my seat, and 10 minutes later, the manager comes down and tells me to step into the lobby, and he says, we need to ask you to leave. I said, what for? And he goes, well, there's noise coming from somewhere in your vicinity, and we think it's you. And I said, well, I'm the one that complained. He said, we need to ask you to leave. I said, I'm not leaving. So I went back to my seat and sat down. And about 10 minutes before the movie ended,
I love how these things
the
escalate.
Police show up. And
police
I was
show
arrested.
Up.
Stun guns. On the floor! Get up! I'm stuck to the floor! Get up! I'm stuck!
And meanwhile, no noise was going on in the movie. The problem was solved.
Well, the teens were still causing the problem. You could see them there on their cell phones, they're text messaging each other, they're laughing, they're talking about conversation. So, I mean, it was just so silly. There's three cops there. They have a canine unit there. I had two sets of cuffs on me. Never been arrested before in my entire life. I'm hauled out in front of people
family?
In line on a Friday night. You
your
know,
family? What? Did they cuff you?
And a lot of the people know who I am. And so I spent the weekend in jail.
They cuffed
you?
Rob said they cuffed you twice?
Yeah, they put two sets of cuffs on me.
And two sets of cuffs, because, you know, set is not going to hold this guy.
Were you in cells with other people? Did you have to tell them you're there for making noise in a theater?
Yeah, I told the guys booking me at the jail, I told them what happened. They said, we don't want to hear it. So I just kept my mouth shut.
I
told my wife,
crazy mad
don't bail me out.
Love bug, too.
No, the bail was $500. I told my wife, do not bail me out. I'll spend the weekend here. So Monday came. I went before a judge. I explained to him what happened. He says, okay, your court date's such, such. Come back on such court date. So I went, and I immediately got the best attorney I could find. It cost me $8,000. Okay. Yeah. $8,000. So
because you wouldn't leave the movie.
He said, you know, we're gonna fight this. So he says, but your wife and kids as witnesses aren't going to be good enough. So I went and put an ad in the paper. And I found the gentleman sitting behind me in the theater.
The one who made the noise?
Yes, and the one that was asked to leave, and he did leave.
This is like one of those prison movies where they go, no, I killed her. No, I killed her.
No, really, it was an eater. I cut it up and ate her. I deep fried her with blue
cuts. This is $8,000.
Yeah, well, I hired an attorney. He was a prosecutor in the county for more than 20 years, and he says, look, we're going to nail him. So I said, okay, you know, what's it going to cost me? So basically I went to court, I was acquitted, and then I turned around and filed a civil suit against them. And took on one of the largest movie theater chains in the country and won.
How much money did you win?
I won enough to pay my attorney fees and enough maybe about to buy a new car.
Wow.
Solid.
And you only go to drive-ins.
Or go to one movie, the way movies go, with popcorn.
Yeah. But buy a car or take a whole family to the movie. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but it was just the satisfaction of, you know, I didn't do it. You know, I spent the weekend in jail. You know, this is just flat-out wrong, you know.
Do your neighbors still call you ex-con Mark from Marysville?
Yeah.
Yes, they do. Mark, great story. Steve in Kingsgate.
Oh, good morning, guys and gal.
Hello.
Well, I'll tell you, I went to buy a truck on the 3rd of July back in the mid-80s, and I walked into a... Now, I don't want to, you know, point out the name of the dealership. Uh-huh. You know, the Ford dealership over in Totem Lake. I don't want to point them out.
Sure.
But
way to keep that to yourself.
Yeah, I walked into the lot, and I have long hair and some tattoos, and I just asked the guy. I said, hey, look, I like this truck. I want to buy it. He said, how much money you got? I said, what? He said, how much money do you have? I said, well, I've got enough money. He says, well, I want to see it. And are you kidding? He said, no, I want to see your money before we go any farther. And I was floored. I could not believe that these guys...
First off, isolated instance, one dork, right, who's a car salesman. And every once in a while, I know that most car salesmen are like college professors. They're the cream of the intelligence crop. And every once in a while, a non-intelligent guy gets in there, and you can't blame the dealership or anybody else. Okay, now that I've had this disclaimer, what did this guy do?
Oh, okay. I didn't know there was a disclaimer thing going on.
Well, I don't want to... You don't want to sully anybody over one anonymous guy, because that can happen anywhere, anytime.
The other guys came out...
Oh, okay. Well,
this did go to court. It's documented.
I'm dying. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what happened?
Okay. So what happens is I asked him. I said, "You're not joking." They said, "No." I said, "Well, I want to talk to someone who's in charge." So you can go into the main showroom. So I walked in there and I asked for somebody in charge, and the gentleman came out, said he was a manager. I explained to him that I wanted to buy this truck out there because I had to do a gig up in the gorge, and I needed a truck. And he said, well, you know, if you're not willing to show us your money, well...
Show us your money? I never said show us your money. The less money they have, the more they're going to make on you with the exorbitant interest rate. This makes no sense to me.
So I told him, I said, look, you know what, I'm going to sue you. And I didn't really think much of it. And my mom told me, she said, do it, sue him. So I did.
So you sued them?
I sued the dealership.
For what?
And I got in on a class action lawsuit, and I ended up winning.
How much?
I won $4,800.
Isn't part of getting the money that you're never supposed to answer that question?
No. That's why I sued the task force.
Okay.
As a joke.
You sued the task force?
That's a joke.
Oh.
That's a joke.
Oh, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, what was it?
We shouldn't even say that over the radio. Matter of fact, I think I need to go.
All right, bye. I think he made it up.
Not sure what he did there.
What?
Hey, I'm right with you.
I think when you take a pill, it takes 8 minutes to kick in. I think that was just about the 8-minute mark.
Most car dealerships, no credit, no money,
no problem.
That's right.
Boy,
his story.
Biker, come on in.
His story had absolutely no credibility.
No.
All right, guys, if you're going to make something up, have an ending. Thea, we only have a minute, so I'm sorry we won't give you a long time, but you canceled your cell phone, they charged you a late fee, and you went to the Better Business Bureau. I just want to know, did you win?
Yes, I did.
Oh.
They ended up, the Verizon, I don't know if I'm supposed to say
whatever, that. Whatever,
they
all charge that fee, so I'm just curious if you can win, and on what grounds did you win?
Absolutely. I filed my complaint with the Better Business Bureau, and about 6 months later, they called me up and wanted to settle with me, and they ended up cutting the check. And the funny thing was is that, you know, I called three or four times before I even went to the Better Business Bureau, and nobody was willing to help me. But as soon as I did that, they were all about it. And what happened was is I had canceled my husband's and my pay-as-you-go cell phones, and they canceled mine, but they didn't cancel my husband's, so they charged me for his, and then they tried to tell me that I hadn't canceled his.
Right. I went through this exact same thing with a different cell phone company.
Yeah.
I just forgot. The guy who canceled got distracted.
So they called me up, and I tried to get them to admit fault, but the lady's like, really, it's not that big of a deal. We'll just give you your $50. And they refused to admit that they had done anything wrong.
She wanted
but
them to admit you're wrong. Yeah. My wife wants me to admit I'm wrong from time to time, too. 18 months ago, Lawrence Roach of Seminole, Florida, across the bay from Tampa, and his wife, whose name hasn't been released, they got divorced after 17 years of marriage. Happens. Lawrence got stuck with $1,200 a month in alimony. I don't view it as getting stuck. I think you owe the alimony. But, well, that's what the story says. $1,200 a month alimony payments. Now he wants to stop paying. The reason, since the divorce, his wife had a sex change and became a man.
Well, I know why the marriage didn't work out.
17 years, that's a long time to be with somebody, though.
That didn't want to be a woman.
Lawrence may lose his battle. Lawrence says, hey, alimony, if marriage is between a man and a woman, which it is in Florida, alimony should be between a man and a woman, or a woman and a man, if you're in that particular lopsided kind of a deal.
Uh-huh.
The payments won't stop. According to a legal expert, he owes the money. He says, no, this is not right. It's degrading. I'm a man. I don't want to be paying alimony to a man. If I can't be married to a man legally, how can I legally pay alimony to a man? Lawrence Roach is on the phone with us. Lawrence, good morning.
Good morning.
Did we describe the story correctly?
Yes, you did. Right. The only thing is that I cannot actually prove that there has been a sex change performed without getting a private investigator involved.
They call that a private investigator, don't they?
Yes, I actually cannot prove that without the private investigator, and I don't have money for one. But I do know that she's living life as a man.
She's living her life as a man.
Right, there's documents stating so.
Do you believe that she had the whatever that operation is called?
Sex change. I have all the reasons in the world to believe that. I found some stuff on the internet stating that it's very much possible. I believe it is that person.
Okay. Now, did you have any kids?
No.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, because this is, you know, we don't want to confuse children.
No, we have no problem paying for kids, but this here is just outlandish.
Now, going back a few years, you guys must have had a lot of happy years together. 17 years is a lot of marriage.
Yes, the first several years was pretty good, and then the last few, I've seen transformations taking place, and it was hard to cope with. I've seen some strange things going on.
What kind of transformations?
Ordering steroids and testosterone through the internet, and coming to the address, and she started taking steroids.
You scared me, because my wife is just starting to finally like football, and I thought, oh, if it's that kind of change.
Oh, okay. No, she wasn't. She started, like, she needed the DirecTV football package.
No, this is a transformation. Her voice started getting deeper, and body hair, and lifting weights and stuff like that.
She started lifting weights?
Yeah.
Did you talk? Now, at this point, my wife and I would have a talk.
Yes, I tried to, but she clammed up quite a bit, and I could not get too much information out of her on what she was feeling. But one day, she did come to me and ask me if I knew what a transgender was, and I said, yeah. And
that's a car with a bird on the hood, right? The Pontiac makes that?
Pontiac transgender.
Real popular in the 80s, I remember that.
Yeah, I said, well, yeah, of course I know what it is. She says, well, I have transgender characteristics, and I'm really a man. That's nice to know after all these years of being married to you.
Now, you said you had a bunch of, more than 10, I assume, good years of all the things that men and women do, right?
It was kind of strange anyways.
Never was that good.
The first few years was okay.
Okay.
Didn't have much of a life, and to be able to have her own mind from her growing up, and then I helped her be her own person, and she is her own person.
So you helped her in a way. You probably shouldn't have married her at this point. That's probably
That's correct.
Yeah. And so now, why did she? If she doesn't have children, why does she get alimony? I will never get divorced because I'm a.
Well, I always thought alimony was so that you could live life in the fashion to which you'd been accustomed.
You were accustomed. So you were the breadwinner.
You're a man now.
That's right. So
yeah.
I took care of her all those years. She didn't work, and so I did that willingly. And now that she was one who left, I didn't do anything. She was one who left, threw her wedding bands on the table, and said, "See you later." And then I willingly took care of her all those years, and now I have to take care of her against my will.
Right? Would you take her back if she, backed off on the
never
on the man juice?
Never.
So she filed for divorce. She left you. What were the grounds?
Actually, I filed.
Okay.
I had to, because as long as she was out there running around, the day that she left, she started charging up a credit card bill.
Oh, okay, you had to do
that. And I didn't want to get stuck with all that. There was thousands of dollars building up on credit card bills.
Did you guys have to get an attorney to settle things, or did you want to arm wrestle you for everything?
No, I had to get an attorney right away to keep from those bills coming in, because she started charging stuff, and I had to start something.
All right. Well, I feel for you. I mean, this is a terrible thing to have happen. I mean, it happens. And so the interesting legal question is, do you still owe him alimony money? And a legal expert has said, since alimony is based on your relationship while you were married, not after the marriage is over, you are kind of stuck.
Right, for life. That's the hard part to live with.
The whole life thing,
yeah. Until one of us dies, and that's hard to live with. And actually, toward the last couple of years of the marriage, even when we were living together, she started this transformation into the man characteristics and stuff. So I started, I emailed the Florida state senators, representatives, Congress, even the governor.
Get Mark Foley involved.
Get Mark, yeah.
take him off your hands.
Yeah, right.
She's a little too old.
They all say just go see your attorney. Well, I don't have any money for an attorney anymore.
Well, the alimony goes till one of you dies or remarries. If she finds a woman.
You don't want a woman.
She can't marry. He can't marry another man.
No. Why would anybody get married and lose that money? That's a lot. So, like $15,000 a year.
That's a nice pension.
Looks like it's gonna be death then.
Yeah, she even gets part of my pension, too.
All right, so, wow.
She doesn't want a woman. She's a gay man, the way I understand it.
Well, so now, if you could prove that she has had that she is a he now, if you could prove
there's been a transformation. She was married to him.
Right.
She became a man, but she still likes men, so she's a gay man. Trapped
right.
in a woman's body.
That's
right.
That's
what
hearing.
I am.
Strong hearing.
Let me think about that.
Hold on. Don't hurt yourself.
No, I'm a lesbian trapped in a man's body.
Right.
Okay.
it's strange.
If you need to generate proof that she's a physical man now, is that right?
Yes.
Will that help?
Yes, I believe it would. I'm just looking for help here.
Yeah.
And,
you need somebody to go undercover, and I mean that in every sense of the word, right?
You could do that.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to get stuck for stalking or anything. During the divorce procedures, I was told that I need to quit following her around, which did not happen. I was not following her around or stalking or anything, but evidently she called the sheriffs on me and said that I was stalking her and following her around, which did not happen. So anybody can make a phone call.
Well, you know how you find out stuff about someone.
A private investigator.
You hire a private dick.
Yeah.
I don't have any money for one.
I think for the publicity alone, somebody may do this for free.
Yeah.
To have it on their resume.
What do you do for a living? What's your job?
I work for Pinellas County Utilities. I'm in water reclamation.
Can you sing at all? This sounds like a great country song. My wife left me to become a man. I mean,
wanted other men.
Who wanted other men? A bizarre story.
Yes, it is. And like I say, I'm just looking for help here. Politicians really don't want to do anything. What I can do is try and press for a bill, because actually there is no law saying that a man pays alimony to a not a man.
I'm not sure what's fair here. I mean, in a sense, it's fair and square. Alimony is like mistake tax, right? Alimony is, shouldn't have married this person, didn't work out, I'm stuck because I was the breadwinner. That's what alimony, is that what alimony is?
It's, yeah, yeah. This person's become accustomed to my support, and they get
that's the way it
the
goes.
Court orders that you continue supporting them.
I don't know whose side, you want to take a quick vote?
I'll vote.
Okay, well, no, you can't vote because you're the guy. No, I mean, just take a quick vote from the listeners. You've heard the whole scenario here. Should he have to pay alimony to a man? And since all men are against all alimony to anybody, I will only take votes from women.
And maybe we can find you some pro bono legal help. I mean, this is definitely a unique case.
It is. So only women call. You've heard this. Should he have to pay? Just 1-800-252-1025. Quick, unscientific... a jury of 12 callers.
You know, actually, this is a person I don't know anymore.
Wow.
With the name change and everything, how can you pay an alimony to a person that doesn't...
No, but I mean, nobody out there is saying, I'm paying alimony to a wonderful person, Lawrence. I got news for you.
Yeah, that's so true.
I mean, I'm married to Roberta, but Robert suits her best. She's got big bulging muscles and hair upon her chest. She wanted her another man, a man other than me, but what she wanted more than that was to stand up when she peed. I'm paying alimony to a guy named Bert.
I'm telling you.
Taking half my bench in, and buddy, that sure hurts.
You got a hit right
I'm telling
there.
You, pal. We'll pay all your bills with this song.
Hey, if we make that song, all the proceeds go to you, Lawrence.
Okay. Great. I hope you have good luck with that.
We'll work for you, baby. All right. One guy to another,
let's
man.
Take a vote. You ready? All right, let's go to the phones. Mike, you don't have anybody screened yet. All right, I'm waiting. Yes, hi, this is Mike.
Come on.
How do you feel about it?
Yes.
All right, you done with them? Okay. Helen, that's right, because we said we only take women, and the first calls were probably men. I should give Mike a break. Helen, go ahead.
Hi, I believe in the concept of alimony for somebody who hasn't worked, but it definitely shouldn't be for life, because adults are capable of going out and getting a job to support themselves.
And shouldn't there be a you have to be the same sex you were when you were married clause?
I feel for the guy. I really do. I think it should end.
All right. You're up one on your side there, Lawrence. That's pretty good, huh?
Great.
Let's see what happens next.
No, I'm thrilled.
He's really having a good day. Patricia, what do you think?
You should not have to pay.
Patricia right, says too. You should not have to pay. All right. Thank you, Patricia. Only women. Because if women say no to alimony, that means something.
Yes.
Kathy.
Yes.
Should he pay?
I believe that he needs to pay alimony.
Why?
A man who marries a man or a man who marries a woman is going to get stuck one way or the other.
Was that a joke?
That is not a joke.
That's pretty damn funny.
One way or the other.
One way or the other. Jeez, somebody's
totally
getting stuck
by accident.
Here. Yeah.
Joe would have worked all day on that line. All right. Karen.
Yes.
You say he should have to pay.
Absolutely.
Why?
Because he doesn't get to stop paying alimony just because he doesn't like her life choices.
Ah,
wow.
And the alimony was awarded because why?
Because
he was the breadwinner.
Years in that marriage.
All the years in the marriage, he was the breadwinner. And why is it awarded? Is it assumed that because she's never been a breadwinner before, she can't start now?
No, I don't think that's part of the assumption. No.
Well, why is there alimony to begin with? Why does it even exist?
Well, because there's always going to be a difference between the money that a woman can make and the money that a man can make in a job.
Always.
And she has made sacrifices so that he could earn the money that he's... That
she made sacrifices. She pumped iron and drank steroids in their living room.
That has nothing to do with
she shaves.
Marriage.
But no, she made the bed and washed the clothes, too.
Did
probably.
She do any of that stuff, Lawrence?
Yeah, once in a while, whenever she felt like it.
Homemaker.
Now that's normal.
That's
a homemaker heartbreaking.
All right. It's going not so well
half
so
and
far.
Half.
It's half and half. It's yeah. 2-2.
Mm.
Mary. Mary?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Well, I think that, you know, depending on the situation, that he should probably have to pay something for a short period of time, but there should be a time limit on it, because I agree with the other woman that there's a million programs out there that this person, regardless of their situation, I mean, there's an opportunity to get some training, to get some skills, and then eventually take care of yourself. I mean, I don't think he should be responsible forever.
All right, Michelle, go ahead.
I just think that he should try and get on this woman, man, whatever it is, get on that person's good side, and maybe he won't ask for it anymore. You know, aren't gay men sensitive?
I mean, I don't know about this one.
I don't know, yeah. Yeah.
She didn't like take to decorating or any of that stuff, did
yes,
she?
Yes or no?
I think, no, he shouldn't have to pay, shouldn't but I think pay. That he should start being nice to this person, and maybe she won't want it anymore.
All right. Helene is next. Helene?
Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering, in Florida, why do you have to pay it for life?
Lawrence?
That's a good question. I agree with the other caller. I wouldn't have no problem helping her get on her feet for a couple of years, paying to get a trade and stuff, which I did.
Steelworker.
There was a trade going on while we were still together,
right.
And a couple of years would be fine, but for life, that's hard to live with.
You know what, Lawrence, and thank you very much. Lawrence, there is some sort of compromise to be worked out here. Unfortunately, it takes money. It takes a lawyer.
That's right.
That's why we're making the song.
We're going to make your song. We're going to make your song. It might take us a couple of days, but we're going to call you back, okay?
Okay.
All right, hang on a second.
It seems your peers have spoken. Lawrence, you're stuck for life. The only thing that's more hung than this jury is your ex-wife.